podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don Neely view system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to Rate Don't Hate. I am your host for this international break edition of the show, which I don't think has ever been done before, but we need content people with, well, games getting cancelled. And yeah, nobody wants to do podcasts about the England national team, do they? Let's be honest. But we're going to go through some season so far ratings. And I will try and do some mathematical stuff by working out the averages by clearly just hovering over numbers in a spreadsheet. And it will tell me the average because I'm not that clever. Not that hard to do that. But I have two guests for me, which I'm hoping to try and do from now on because it'd be less of me speaking. I know I am rambling right now, but hey-ho. I have Dave with me. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm good, guy. I'm just thinking about, obviously, the last time I was on here, it was the Man United game. So whilst this one isn't exactly going to be incredibly upbeat based on how we've started, it'll be a little bit better than that, I think.
Well, at least there's no game to jinx.
Yeah, exactly.
If England get beat 7-0 tomorrow, we know our powers are strong. And we also have Stephen Smith with us. How are you doing, Stephen?
I hate International Week. Yeah. I even thought yesterday, is it over yet? And I realised that I don't think it's even started.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. I think the first, I assume the first games are tonight. Yeah, it's the Nations League as well, so it's even more pointless because it's a made-up thing, which is basically just friendlies. But hey-ho, something to watch in the background instead of like Coronation Street, which may be preferable. But we will get into the players. So basically, we're going to do a season so far rating. The rating will probably be a second afterthought type thing because the discussion's where it really matters in this. But we'll start off with an easy one in Alisson. And Stephen, I'll start with you. I mean, Alisson's had, I think he's just mostly been fine because I think he's been good in the games that we've won. But in the games we've lost, I don't think there's been a single goal, never mind a result that's been his fault.
It's just a six because I don't know. Nothing's, you know, gelling about the team, and he does look a bit shaky in moments. But as I said before, he's defined by his moments because oftentimes he doesn't have a lot to do. So you know, he's just had an average season. So he's not been spectacular, and maybe we needed him to be more spectacular. And so I can't give him a seven because maybe, you know, we needed like David De Gea 2012 levels of heroics. He's the world's best goalkeeper. There's no issue about him. He's not the worry.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair, I mean, a couple of his better performances, the Napoli game was a nightmare, but he played well himself, and we don't have that in our spreadsheet, which doesn't help. But yeah, it's a tough one. But six in the similar range for you there, Dave?
I went with seven. I just think, you know, we've seen a lot of Liverpool's biggest and most important players off it at the start of the season. And Alisson, to his credit, obviously goalkeeper position is different. The dynamics are different in that position. But I think, you know, his level has been, you know, pretty consistent still. And if you look at his kind of shot stopper numbers, he's about where you sort of should be really in terms of preventing goals. So yeah, I went with the 7. I feel like he's been good rather than just kind of simply average, to be fair.
Yeah, I think most people would agree with that. So we've got the boring one out the way, and Dave, I'll stick with you. Trent. Yes.
Well,
our one of one right back in the world who is currently stinking up the joint, I think it's fair to say.
So obviously a lot made of the lack of effort allegedly, and the defensive failing so far, which is very interesting as a discussion. I think for me it's not so much lack of effort, or that's not really how I'd label it, and I think it was maybe something I mentioned when I was on that United podcast. It's like it's about taking responsibility, because I feel that he is deferring responsibility to centre backs and to midfielders to do a lot of the defensive work for them at times, and I don't believe that he is slackening off in terms of his commitment. I think it's more of a subconscious thing like that, because he is so focused and because he's heard so much about his game being defined by offensive contributions. So I've just been reading a bit of Pep Linders's book, and he talks about Trent sort of adamantly wanting to be in the captain's group, and talks about his leadership quality as well. You know, if he wants to be a leader for this team going forward, he is going to have to be someone who takes responsibility in his play, and that obviously extends to defending. But I also think, you know, beyond all of that, offensively, he's been way off it as well. Mm-hmm. I think the lack of quality from him, certainly based on his normal standards, has been a little bit alarming, to be honest. So that needs to improve too. But what I would say in terms of it not being maybe a 3 or anything like that is there were signs, I think, of a response from him against Ajax. And I know the goal did come down his side, but I thought for the most part he did defend better, defended with sort of a bit of tenacity at times, and yeah, a little bit better going forward too. So hopefully that's a building block for him.
Yeah, that's the thing. And Stephen, my average, these are just Premier League games, I should keep reminding people, my average is 4.83 recurring for Trent, which is kind of unthinkable considering the way he usually plays. But he has had these odd poor spells. But with Trent, I think Dave's right in terms of the Ajax game was hopefully a turning point, especially that second half where he defended much better and basically pocketed Bergwijn, I think it was. But Trent, I mean, if you look at the individual games, I think Bournemouth was basically the outlier in terms of the Premier League performances from him and a couple others. But overall, it's been below par. But the Ajax game's hopefully where his season starts.
Yeah, I mean, I gave Trent a 5. And I think, like so many of the players in our squad, the system defines how they can react in certain situations. The worst games and the worst periods we've seen Trent play have been next to Joe, probably. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a fullback, if you see your inside centre half getting skinned and you see your right side centre mid so far up because he's actually a winger, I think it's just panic stations where we're overloading him. We take out the other playmaker in Thiago, and there must be so much internal conflict within him that I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do that. You know, in terms of the leadership thing, leaders don't need to say that they're leaders. They just are. So that's not for him to decide. I don't think Roy Keane or Royce or Graham Souness ever turned around and said, I want to be the captain. They just happened to walk into a room and, you know, they weren't defined by the armband or the leadership group. They just happened to lead. So Trent needs to get back to, you know, Fabian Delph's favourite things, the fundamentals of what he is. He's a fullback. We need him to simplify his game. And that's what he did second half against Ajax. He simplified his game. He didn't overthink things. He didn't think, do his job, and then he's not culpable.
Yeah.
I think he tries to do too much and overload himself. Where should I be too high? Should I, should are they going to win it? And then I don't want to be caught too deep, so I can't impact the counter-attack. Shall I stay high? Shall I open up my body? These are things against top-tier performers. Napoli are one of the best attacking outfits in Europe. I'm not going to judge him solely on that performance. It's the bigger picture. The group within the midfield has been dismantled by personnel and thus our ability to put the system first. Take away the systematic players, the Ginnies, the Thiagos. Fab is pulled all over the place. Trent doesn't know where to be. And, you know, tell me this. Has the lad at Chelsea had a worse season? And it just shows the levels that Trent is. He's the world's best right back and he's going through a bad 6-7 game spell. He'll bounce back and by the season's end, he'll have that kind of Jordan Henderson effect where everyone forgot to start the season and they'll be talking about him as an award-winning player. He's brilliant. We just need to make sure that we're protecting him. Don't ask him to be the most attacking fullback in world football and then scathe him because he gets skinned by players that attack his area because he has no midfield reliance and he's playing with a different centre-half every week. It's a five because his levels are dramatically high, but it's not all on him.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a systemic issue there, which we'll probably get onto when we get to the midfield, as you say. But Dave, what was your rating for Trent again?
I gave him a four.
Four, yeah. Yeah. It's a similar ballpark, I think. Four or five is about right for him, really. Obviously, levels to come from him. We'll do the centre-back in somewhat of a group. We'll do Matip and Gomez together because Matip's obviously only had the one Premier League game, which was the first game of the season. And Gomez is kind of... It's weird because I think he's got fine ratings. I think, obviously, the Napoli game isn't in this. We'll obviously talk about it here because they're not doing the spreadsheet, but I just think, for me personally, Stephen, that I think Gomez, these last couple of years where he's been injured and out the team, it's kind of widened the gap between Matip and, well, I think Ibu's just different level potential as well. But I think he's still been good, but I think there's just more we can get from Matip and Ibu.
The thing with Joe is he knows he has to be spectacular to keep his place. So I think we've seen it a few times when Ox has played, he overplays.
Yeah.
He thinks, I've got to be spectacular, otherwise I'm back on the bench. So we saw Osimhen go at Joe a couple of times and Joe try and nick it away from him. I don't remember that being a fundamental part of Joe's game. I just see that as Joe thinking, Matip's back on the bench. I need to be the player that can not only take it away from this player, take it off his toes, and then surge forward. Because if I am not an 8 or a 9 in this game, I'm on the bench. He ends up with a 0 from me that game against Napoli. He's just in that chasm of, I'm not quite good enough. I'm not quite a Klopp centre-half. I'm fighting to get into this team. And I think he's suffering from the same conflicts where, but different ones. He's just overthinking his defending. And he doesn't need to. Sometimes just defend. Just defend. Sometimes you've got to clear your lines. Relieve pressure. Get up the pitch. You've got the pace to deal with things. Don't try and be something you're not. Don't try and be a combination of Joao and Virgil. Because he's not. Be Joe Gomez. The best version of Joe Gomez is still the best English centre-half in the league. It just happens to be only the fourth centre-half in this Liverpool team. For me, what have I given? I've given Joe a four, and that's probably being kind.
Ooh, I think that's a bit harsh.
Is it?
Well, to be fair, if you're counting the Napoli game... Yeah,
I'm carrying the Napoli.
Yeah.
Maybe not from a numerical point of view, but how do you disregard it? I can't think I'm a jury, disregard that bit of evidence. It's imprinted into my mind. You know, it was horrific. And so,
Yes, we put that one in the Lovren folder.
Absolutely. Yeah, Wembley, Harry Kane. God. Yeah. I mean, if I'm looking at league, it's six. if I'm looking at league and Champions League, maybe it's lower than a four, but it's a four because he's just not been, he's not Joan, he's not Ebu.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, Dave, if I come to you, I mean, my league average is 6.6. God, I just remembered Nat Phillips started a Premier League game for us. Good God. What a time to be alive. Well, I mean, if I'm looking at my ratings, he's got four sevens and a five. Obviously, one of the sevens is a sub-appearance in that Crystal Palace game. So I don't think he's been an issue in terms of the league. I think the Napoli game was horrendous, obviously, but how do you view him? Because I think what Stephen said there is he is clearly the fourth choice centre back, and I'd agree with that. But I still think he's an excellent centre back, Dave.
Well, I landed on a five, and I think based on what you two are saying in terms of if you average it out, league and Champions League, that seems to me like a sensible middle ground. A five out of ten, I think it's kind of summed up by, you know, you have this game against Everton where I thought he was Liverpool's best player. And he looked like he was getting back to the levels, you know, that you've alluded to. And then obviously Napoli is, you know, again, like you've both touched on, really, it's one of the worst sort of defensive performances on an individual level you kind of have seen under Jurgen Klopp. So you have those two are the real headlines for obviously different reasons. And then the other games, I think he was just kind of okay. Looking like he was maybe trying to ramp up. And I did wonder, because we've seen precedent for this of you know, if he can maintain a good level of form, if he can ramp up back to his former levels, you know, is it now his place to lose in the team? Is it going to be that when Matip and Konate are back, you know, they're almost waiting again on Gomez to get injured before they're into the team? Because, you know, we've seen that in the past with Gomez and Matip.
I think that was the issue, and I think that's what's affected him so much in the Napoli game.
I think, yeah, because as you said, maybe he did feel that pressure. But it was like, it felt like a repeat of that dynamic might be taking place. Obviously, Matip comes back in, and we've not seen too much from this season. But I was struck in that Napoli game when he came on by the aggression that he showed, and it was refreshing in that, you know, defending on the front foot as opposed to maybe backing off too much, which our defenders can be guilty of, obviously within the team sort of style of play, but sometimes maybe taking a bit too far. And then against Ajax, maybe, you know, solid defensively too, but maybe the big thing that struck you in that game was just how important he was actually going forward and
the adventures.
as an extra sort of problem for the opposition to solve when he makes these sort of darting runs, which are really, really effective. You know, he's among the best when it comes to that. So, yeah. Can't really argue at all with the decision to put Matip back into the side. And they probably, you know, Gomez might get one or two more rotational opportunities, but Konate will be coming back soon by the sounds of it. So, not looking too brilliant for him. And it's all kind of unravelled, really, against Napoli.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think for the Everton game, I wanted Gomez to go back to right back, because I thought Trent was a bigger issue in that game. More, I think you alluded to it with the laziness arguments at the start when we went on about Trent. But yeah, if we need to get the best out of Trent, and him rotating with Gomez probably won't do that in Trent. But Matip, yeah, the Fulham game at the start, nothing really there to rate there. But in terms of Matip's importance and adding on Ebu into this conversation, who obviously hasn't played yet, I think them two, as I said, they just have a little bit more. And maybe it is just a rhythm thing, whereas they played consistently for basically two seasons now. Well, Matip didn't, he got injured a couple of seasons ago. But Ebu had a good year at Leipzig. And last year, they obviously played a million games each. So, yeah, I think if Gomez can get back up to 18, 19 levels, it'll be class. He will be in this conversation. But since that injury that season, he just hasn't been there. But yeah, I think what you're saying there, Stephen, he needs to play his own game rather than going on Joel Matip adventures or just trying to be a physical freak that Ebu Konate is. I think he just needs to play his own game, which is clever passing, being quite quick for a defender, and just being positionally pretty excellent.
What? Klopp doesn't help this, because we've seen it with Henderson, we've seen it with Milner, And Joe's probably aware that he's got his favourites and they're coming back in. So I have to be exceptional to keep my place. Otherwise, I'm just dropped. We've seen Ox have good games and then Henson just comes straight back in because he's John Henson.
Well, that was certainly a debate at the end of last season because I think that was probably Naby Keita's best spell, wasn't it? But I think everyone assumed Hendo would go straight back in the team, which I suppose we'll get onto when we get into the midfield, which won't be too far away. But yeah, we'll return to that because I think it is a good point. Dave, I'll start with you on Van Dijk, who has gone from being the best defender in the world by basically everyone agreeing that. And apparently he's all finished and dreadful now. It's obviously football fandom and it changes every game. But Van Dijk, in terms of my average for him, I have a 5.8, which is just league on its own again, as I keep referring to. But I think there's a couple of occasions where you think he can do a bit more. But I don't think he's been dreadful by any account. I just don't think he's been to that faultless level that we had basically before his injury.
Yeah. So there's two ways you can do this. I think when you rate Van Dijk, you can either rate him on Van Dijk levels, in which case I think he is really, really low. Mm. Or you can rate him by the levels of, you know, a standard like sort of top flight centre back. And I've kind of maybe been more towards the latter and given him a 5.
Yeah.
I think you can't ignore the fact that he's made big mistakes, you know, obviously giving away penalties against Fulham and Napoli, but also the United game as well, where he was criticised for not engaging there. But like you said, Guy, I do think he's also had stronger games that have gone under the radar because that's taken as what's expected. So even though he is one of these maybe big players who has struggled at the start of the season, I wouldn't necessarily be putting him kind of in the lower half of the ratings, if you get me, in terms of a score out of 10. I think a 5 is about where I'd land for him.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I think ultimately he is a centre-back. He can't help us control the game. He can't because he's Van Dijk and he's that good. But he's not going to control the game from centre-back. In the way we've been playing, and he's not going. He could score us a million goals, but he's not allowed to score from corners for some reason. But yeah, he's not. He's not the sort of one who can clutch winners a game in that regard. Obviously, the defensive work can improve, as you say. There's a couple or a few occasions where he's done un-Van Dijk like things. But yeah, Stephen, would you agree with that? He's been for human levels, he's been fine. Whereas Van Dijk levels, there's still more to come.
If you take any centre-half in the league that isn't part of our group and say, play a high line, take away Thiago, take away Naby, so take away control, but still give yourself half a pitch to defend.
Yeah.
He's done very little wrong, apart from not be... He's still the best defender in the world. Could you imagine Ruben Diaz trying to... It'd be like watching Phil Jones. Yeah, I'm not having anything bad on VVD. You don't divine brilliance by moments, and VVD is just oozes class. And of course, he's going to have his down moments. Of course, he's going to look arrogant. If you're the best defender in the world and you know it, and everyone around you knows it, maybe you do, you know, have those moments. Ultimately, out of 1,000 things he's going to do this season, it's going to be well over 900 that he does perfectly. It's going to be another 50 that he does well. It's going to be another 25 that he does reasonably well. And there's going to be 20 iffy moments and 5 bad. We've probably consolidated those 5 bad ones into this opening run. I don't think the team's been prepped properly. I think they've probably been overtrained. We've had too many injuries. And if you took out Virgil from that group and put anyone, and I mean Ibu, Matip, I think it would have been worse. Yeah. Though he's not been his levels, it's not been a bad level at all. Yeah, when he came back from his ACL, he was finished. When he signed for us, it was overpaying. Now this bad little period, well, Ben White's better. It's all just ridiculous nonsense. If you're talking about it, it's because of the level he is. And for the next 4 years, he'll be the best defender in world football before Konate takes over. We just need to make sure that we're fully equipped to fill the other roles, and we haven't been. The defence has been thrown under the bus a little bit, and that bus has been driven by Jurgen Klopp, and he's had Jordan Henderson and James Milner sat at the front.
The midfield's going to be fun to talk about. Yeah, I kind of agree. I think Van Dijk, I think he just gets blown out of proportion because he is Van Dijk, to be fair. But maybe one that hasn't been blown out of proportion, Stephen, is Robertson. I don't know, I'll use this phrase, but I think it's probably a bit too harsh. I think the rot set in, which I think is harsh, last year, and then this year, it's kind of just, it's plateaued, the right and wrong, I think it's the wrong word, but I think it's just kind of continued and got worse as the team's got worse, if that makes sense. A 4.8 average rating in terms of, in the Premier League games from my ratings. Adding on the Champions League game where I don't think he played well at all. It's just an odd one with Robbo because he was basically perfect for 3 years, 2.5 years, because he didn't start the first half of the of his year. But it's just odd when you see, because now I think there was a discussion last year, at the start of last year, whether we can use Tsimikas more. But I never thought the argument was, can Tsimikas replace Robertson? Whereas now I think the way he started the season, I think that could be a discussion quite soon.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if I gave it, but Virgil was 6 for me.
Yes.
Robbo's a 5. I remember speaking about it, I think it was after the, I don't think it was the Bournemouth game. I think it was, either way. What we did last season, we took away Mane and we put Mane inside and then we gave him a Maverick to work with. That Maverick is sensational. And so he's been doubled up upon. At the start of this season, we've taken away the world's best controlling central midfielder. So Robbo's reactionary. Robbo's not Trent. Trent can make things happen. Robbo requires on others to either positionally put him into areas where he can put in a first-time cross. He's good at defending one-on-one, but obviously he needs that midfielders to come back with him and sometimes slant across. And if Milner's, you know, getting on his Zimmer, Robbo can catch it. Robbo can catch everyone up at that point. So Robbo is what Robbo is. We need to surround him with good players. Trent, we need to surround him with players that can cover him. It's a difference between the two fullbacks. They're very different in their styles, but they're, you know, sometimes equally effective. We know that Trent is world class. The thing with Tsimikas is Tsimikas can do things without the reliability of others because he can cross from all sorts of angles. He's got good one touch ability, good control, and he'll open up angles at which to move into.
Playing can, take, with, can actually take a set piece as well, like Robertson.
Your favourite all time left back had a good half season played next to VVD.
How dare.
So, from a defensive point of view, that's what he can give to you. He has, just ahead of him, Thiago.
That was pre-VVD.
That was a little bit on Albie. In terms of Robbo, he's got the most glorious sandwich of players.
Mm.
But, you know, if Virgil's having to go across the cover, the deficiencies on the other side, and Fab's all over the place because, you know, we've got a winger and a my dad playing. Robbo's having to do too much that he can't do. You know, he hasn't got that relationship with Diaz yet that he had with Mane. And I think any fullback in world football would have built a sterling relationship with Ginny. Hasn't got that.
Yeah.
Clearly, you know, anyone that's going to play anywhere near Thiago is going to benefit. Hasn't had that. So he's guilty of his limitations in that he's a reactionary force that needs others to put him in good positions. He can't put himself there. Trent can't be glued to the sideline by good marking and cutting or passing lanes because he can then play that 60-yard switch or he can play that driven through the line ball. Robert can't do that. So what you do is you, if Milner's similar in his attributes, he's reactionary. So he needs the pass. And if you haven't got control around him, or you haven't got Mane, who was so reliable in what he could do, because they just played together so much. Diaz, you don't know where you're going to get. I don't know where he's going to go, outside, inside, move into centre forward, move Darwin out. You don't know. And that's the great things for him. Must be horrible for a fullback, because you don't know what you're going to get. So Robbo's limitations are being highlighted by taking out key facets around him. Tsimikas should be in the team if Thiago isn't. If we're going to throw, because we need that creative force on that side, and Tsimikas has that. So Robbo needs a Naby or a Thiago. Now, hopefully, one of those is always in now. You know, if we can get Arthur Melo up to speed, I don't know how that's going to work, but we just need that person that can play that first time ball and just create openings for Robbo, because he can't do it himself. Robbo is a five for me. It's been poor, and he should be taken out of the team because we have Tsimikas, and maybe that's the beginning of that changing, the changing of the guard, because he can't be reliant on certain people. But yeah.
Did you have a rating for Tsimikas as well, seeing as we're talking about him in tandem?
I gave him a 6.
Yeah.
Which is just better than Robbo.
Yeah.
And better in clinical moments. He's a better fundamental. He's got more to his game. He doesn't have to rely on other people. You can give him a horrendous ball back and he'll dig out a great cross. He can put in a great corner. We've seen his tenacity in trying to get back. Yes, Robbo has that. But then tight situations, Tsimikas seems to be able to pick out a good inside pass if line's closed off. He just seems like a better decision maker, because he probably hasn't been reliant on Thiago, because, you know, he hasn't had enough game time. I think people can just become too comfortable in those around them. Fab probably got too reliant on having Thiago there. You know, maybe Virgil got too reliant on having Matip there. Maybe Trent got too reliant on having Matip and whomever. It's it all points to lack of depth. And if we have more depth and more coverage, we can patch things together for games at times. But I think Dave said on Raw, if we're picking a 36-year-old midfielder and a 18, 19-year-old right winger in centre mid for Liverpool in 2022, nothing good comes from that. It needs to be momentary or League Cup. So Tsimikas should have the shirt, but he won't get the shirt. Robbo will get the shirt because he's Robbo, and that will come to Klopp's rating later.
Well, that's the thing, Dave. I mean, what do you make of it? I mean, if we start with Tsimikas, if we look at him on his own, I think he's been good in spell. Like the ball with game, I think he came on and got two assists. The Ajax game, I thought he was really good. But other than that, I think he had a horrid, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Palace he came on and was worse than Robbo somehow. But I think Tsimikas, he's got an opportunity here to have a discussion around it. I think that's how you'd word it. And I don't think he's grabbed it with both hands just yet, but I kind of agree with Stephen that I think Robbo will just get the run because he is Robbo, but yeah, it's almost become, I think it has become a worry, actually, because it does stem into last season as well. But your thoughts on the left back, sorry.
I mean, I don't think, and I've seen a few people mention it, and you touch on it there, I don't think there's a prospect of Tsimikas taking over the first choice role at this stage. Yeah. I think Robertson's just got that secured on the basis of what he's achieved at the club. Some people would agree with that, some people wouldn't, but just in terms of this season so far, I think I'll start with Robbo. I'd agree, it's just been underwhelming from him, to be honest. Yeah. And I think that's applies for going forward, applies for defending as well. Like I don't think he's been a big problem, but I don't think he's made a big difference either. I think he's just kind of been there. He's been an afterthought. That's what it's felt like. And if I'm being completely honest, and it's not conversation we maybe like to have, because we're very, you know, we're always trying to fight his corner. You know, most Liverpool fans would agree that he's the best in the world in his position. But
yeah,
bottom line, has he, the past sort of however long since the start of last season, has he been at his absolute peak levels? Maybe not.
It feels like Cancelo overtook him in terms of the Premier League rankings of left backs.
Yeah. And that's the thing. So maybe it's a bit like the discussion is a little bit skewed by him slightly playing out of position, but it's like he's come close in moments to it, but I just don't feel that we've maybe seen him have a sustained run of like what we'd class as like vintage Robertson form. And I think what's telling is when he got injured, it was like, obviously it's a blow, but I didn't really fret too much about it. Mm. And partly that reflects the quality of Tsimikas, but also I think the form of Robertson. And on Tsimikas, you know, I'm a huge fan of his. I don't think his substitute appearances and that kind of tactic from Klopp, which was partly the result of not having players available in terms of squad depth, but I don't think that tactic has worked brilliantly. To be honest, you know, it's not been a disaster by any means, but it's not really made a big difference. Although, you know, it is a left back for left back change, so maybe there is a limit to the transformation.
You're not bringing on Pete Rabot or Carlos, but
yeah, exactly.
Flanagan or something like that. Are you?
So, yeah, so performances, kind of average. Ajax, I thought he was probably sort of top three, maybe best players. So he had a really good game there. So I think in terms of a rating, I've gone for a 6 for both of them, but like it would be sort of more towards a 5.5 and a 6.5 for Robertson and Tsimikas respectively. Yeah. If that makes sense. But I think I'd just about land on a 6 for the two. For sort of Tsimikas, it's definitely one that could improve if he does get a bit more game time in the next few weeks. But the Robertson injury, I think I'm right in saying, won't keep him out for too long after the internationals anyway.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And I think you're right in what you said in the start of that when Robbo gets injured, because he has had the odd injury. I think he had the one at the start of last season, obviously. Now, if there's one position in our team where you want someone to get injured, and obviously you never do, but it is left-back, because I think we've got two really good left-backs. Maybe one is not playing at the level that he was a couple of years ago, but I think we still have two of the best left-backs, certainly in the league, and if not the world. But yeah, I think Robbo does have to... I think that's the thing. I think one of you has worded it. He's never really been the main issue in defence, but he's always feeling like you're kind of doing something wrong, but you're not the biggest eye-catching mistake in a goal, so you kind of get away with it. So yeah, I think up his game a couple percent, or like 10%, and I think he'll be back to being in the good books quite quickly. But yeah, I think it does stem from just wanting to see more of Tsimikas. But anyway, we'll move on from left back, because it's relatively boring to what we're going to discuss now. And Stephen, you've kind of been hinting at it. We'll start off with James Milner, and we'll let you get all that out your system before moving off from James Milner. I will get my average rating for the league position, and that is we need more, because these are weird ratings, but you've got a 4.83 recurring, which I think a few people have, but we need more of a database for that. But Milner, it's a tough one, because obviously we look at it quite plainly that we just rate him out of 10, and then this shows a bit more general, but it's not his fault he's playing. Which I'm sure you'll come on to when we talk about Klopp at the end. But when he does play, you just kind of look at him and go, you're kind of finished at this level, especially for a team like Liverpool, who requires on physicality so much. But yeah, it's kind of been sad watching him, because he's very likable.
Do you know what it is? I'm about 4 years older than Millie, and I stopped playing about 3 years ago. And, you know, this is, you know, grassroots level, very much so. And my legs went. And I remember I was on the beach last year chasing my dogs, and I could just see in my peripheral that I was getting video by my sister, and I thought, oh, I'm gonna put it in here. I'm going to really shift. And in myself, I thought, oh, I can still move, you know. When I look back at that video, it looked like James Milner on the football pitch, just running through cement. And I thought, Christ, I can't run anymore, can I? And you say it's not his fault. Gary Neville knew when. He stepped away and said, I can't. Klopp is guilty of, you know, his lieutenants, his captaincy pool, the people he relies upon. Make him a coach then. Give him a job in the canteen. Don't give him a shirt that allows him to play in the Premier League in 2022, let alone 2018. It's just, I really like James Milner as a person. He seems like a really good guy that I would happily have a cup of tea with. I do not want to see him play for Liverpool. They target him. He doesn't know where to be. We're a dynamic team that needs to be able to move across the pitch. And if we're not expert in our precision and our off-ball duties, then we end up chasing. Certain players can chase. He can't. He has a good opening 10 minutes. I think he had a pot shot against someone a few games ago. Was it United where he just, you know, he gave everything for the opening 10 minutes and...
The headless chicken game.
The headless chicken game.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah, that was United, yeah.
You never saw Ginny do that. You don't see Thiago do that. It's control. It's not Robbie Savage chasing that ball. We all love that moment where Robbo chased down five people in his opening season. But Milner's defining his game upon this. Well, I can put in the effort. And it's all about the effort. I'll keep running until, you know, day is night. But he just has limited abilities. He can't turn. He can't run. He can't pick a pass. He can hit people late on in games. But even that's kind of becoming maybe he can't. How has he got a shirt? He just might as well give one to Jay Spearing at this stage.
Has he got one
of the 25 though? Christ, Milner's one of the fundamental 12, 14 players, and it just, oh, you know, everyone, you just, you rub your head and you think, oh, they're going after him. They're just, you know, Man United put out the most attacking, vulnerable midfield ever, and they swarmed all over us. And Milner couldn't have a touch, and Fab was just drawn all over the place, and Harvey was doing winger things, you know, high up the pitch. Milner had to be the adult in the room and at the start of the season and say, I can't do this. I need to step away. Neville, I don't like Neville. I think he's a twat. But his legs went. He got torn apart one day and he stepped away and said, for the good of the team, because if I step away, one of these really good youngsters is going to get my minutes. Or Curtis Jones is.
To be fair, I think the difference between that and me, I think Neville only ever wanted to play for Man United, and I think he knew his time at Man United was done. Where I know it's in the context that he's been at Liverpool 6 years now, it might be longer, I think it's 7 actually. He may not be good enough to play for Liverpool, and I think most people would agree with that, certainly as a starter.
But he'd get torn apart in the Championship. He wouldn't be able to handle the pace of the Championship.
But he doesn't know that himself.
Because I
don't know about that.
If you're having a bad game, the first person that knows is yourself. I bet Joe Gomez kind of dropped his head and thought.
Oh, even at 5-a-side, we know that stuff. But I think.
Now, what I'm trying to say is in that Nasty game, Joe Gomez would have dropped his head and God, thank God you've taken me out of that.
Yeah.
Whereas Milner probably was the opposite. I'll improve upon that. Maybe he's just completely ignorant to it all. I mean, Henderson has been. It's a thing, you know, I love Klopp, but it's infuriating because...
Well, let's bring David in. He might be in the middle here somewhere. With Milner, I think if we start off the art, everyone likes Milner. He's very likable. The whole Ribéry and his Twitter's fantastic and stuff like that. But as a player, I thought even a couple of years ago, I don't think he should have been playing that many games for us. But when he got the new contract, I think everyone hoped it would have been as, the eighth choice midfielder, even maybe a bit lower than that. And you thought, influence the dressing room, all that jazz. Whether it's injuries or the Naby Keita situation, whatever the hell that is, he's played too many games for whatever reason. And yeah, I think that's where the doubts and concerns about him are getting shown up. But what's your thoughts on Milner?
Right, so I've gone with a 3 out of 10 rating. First of all, let me say that. So I'll preface it, with that take, really. But even though I've gone with a 3, I still feel that Stephen's being very, very harsh. And the reason is because, and I've kind of led into it there, Guy, this is not the role that he was supposed to play. He signed a 1-year contract on reduced terms. He's 36, I think.
Yeah.
He is supposed to be the 8th or 9th choice midfielder. And when he's played, he's looked like a 36-year-old who signed a 1-year contract on reduced terms and the 8th or 9th choice midfielder. Now, you can criticise the club maybe for giving him a new deal in the knowledge that they do have injury-prone players in front of him. I understand that, but I think to put that all on Milner when it's kind of an unforeseen early season injury crisis, I think is unfair. Personally, I think the role he's supposed to play is coming off the bench. You know, whether we as fans agree or not, Klopp clearly thinks that Milner is a player who can affect games off the bench. And in fairness, we have seen one or two decent sub appearances from him this season, in addition to maybe one or two where he has struggled a bit. You know, I'm thinking the Fulham game and Newcastle as well. I think he did improve Liverpool in his defence.
The right back sub game.
And I just think in an ideal world, he'd be doing that and he'd be playing in the domestic cup early rounds and he'd be the figure who was there helping the youngsters around him, which, you know, I think there's no doubt about how valuable he can be in terms of that leadership. Whether that's off the pitch or on the pitch now is up for debate. But, you know, the idea that Milner should almost be self-policing and saying and taking himself out the firing line, I think, is unfair because ultimately it's down to the manager. And like I touched on earlier, it might be down to the club. I think if things normalise, I still believe that Milner can show some value to Liverpool in the role that I mentioned as that kind of player at the bottom of the midfield pecking order who's only going to be used in very specific situations.
No, I think that is fair as well. Because I think that Newcastle game is a good example. Trent was having an off night, as we mentioned, with his reins. Milner came on, didn't do anything amazing, but he was just steady. That's kind of what Milner's been at Liverpool. I don't think he's been an exciting player since he was probably at Aston Villa, which was a long time ago. But you just sometimes you want a steady presence. And sometimes he obviously can't bring that all the time, especially when he starts game. And I think you've even said that yourself there, David, that he should be 8th or 9th choice. But it's just, and this is obviously the wrong podcast for it, but you go back to the summer, we were obviously thinking Naby Keita would play, whether he's injured or not. It doesn't really matter in that. But we thought he'd play. We obviously thought we'd get Tchouaméni. I don't think many fans thought we'd just kind of, oh, we can't get Tchouaméni, no midfielder for us. Ox doesn't exist anymore, obviously. And then Thiago injured all the time. Even Henderson's got injured, which has been a rarity for the last year. I kind of agree that he's playing more than he is. But you give him a 3 out of 10. I'd probably go with a 2 or a 3 myself. If you look at the cold-hearted ratings, it's been bad. But I think the reason it's been bad is because he's been forced to play because of probably poor squad planning, which is a bigger conversation.
I gave him a 2 as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think we all agree, but it's just, it's an odd one. It's an odd one. But we'll move on to Henderson. I presume negative from yourself, Wesley, but I'll start with you, Dave. Where's my Henderson rating? There he is. 4.2, so he's worse than Milner on my rating. Yeah, it's been an odd one for Henderson because he's played all three midfield positions. He doesn't look right on the... He doesn't look correct on the left, so I don't contradict myself there. And I'm glad that kind of came to an end one way or the other. As a right-sided eight, Dave, do you think he can play that role? Because we've obviously changed the way we play midfield. Like, it's not just about the right midfielder just covers the fullback anymore like he used to. Now that he has to play more as a 10, as a right winger, and he has to help Trent, do you think Henderson can still do that, or do you kind of see him just as more of a backup for Fab now?
It's a problem, that position for Liverpool, and that's one of the things that I had noted down, really, is, you know, when he returns from injury, it's going to be between him and Elliot, really, for that role. I think ideally there's a case to be made that you'd actually look to Naby Keita to play that, yeah, to play that role, if possible. Yeah. The experimentation with that midfielder, Fabinho, Thiago, Keita, was limited last season, and and mixed results when they did play. But I just think that if you look at the all-round picture, Henderson, you know, all the talk is about the lack of defensive cover from him, and I'm not going to dispute that. I also think that he's not making an impact this season when he has the ball either, to kind of compensate for that. So not really getting enough from him in either direction. And I think, you know, the thing that I kind of came to realise over the summer was we didn't just need the midfielder for depth like an Artur. We needed an upgrade. We needed the quality midfield starter. And that's obviously the position we'll try and address next summer. And everyone knows who we'll be going for it. But it seems, you know, maybe like it has come too late based on, I know Henderson's not played that much, but the signs were there last season, the warning signs for Liverpool, you could argue. And not much to inspire confidence really in the early stages of this either.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I gave him
a 4, by the way, just to, yeah. I'm not sure I said that, yeah.
I'd maybe go with a 3 as well, just kind of similar level with Milner, because I think the difference between Henderson and Milner is, Milner, you put the asterisks next to it because he's meant to be the eighth choice, as we mentioned, whereas Henderson's our starter. He's the captain. I know that Milner's the vice-captain, but Henderson is the first-choice right centre-mid. Even if we had Naby in his best Liverpool form and Henderson was still the first-choice in the cup finals. I think that's where we can be a bit harsher, Stephen. I know you just kind of obliterated James Milner, but I think there's some more deeper concerns about Henderson because, well, we just give him the new contract. He is a tougher question for Klopp to remove, I think, because Milner's been removed already. Obviously, he's just playing out of necessity at the minute. But Henderson, you've mentioned it a few times, when Ox has a good spell of form, Henderson go back straight in. When Naby has a good spell of form, Henderson goes straight back in. Whether it's injury or not, it doesn't really matter. But Henderson, for me, he seems like he can only play the 6 nowadays. And to be fair, I think the game he played as a 6 was against United, and I think I gave him a 2 out of 10 in that game. So that's not a good sign either. But I think that's his only position now, especially the way we've developed that right side centre mid role.
I gave Hendo a 3 as well. You say the 6. I don't even know if he can do that now. You know how England kind of play of Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice? I think when we've got our two controlling midfielders, Thiago and Naby, not available, we need to pivot into a tight 2 screening, simplify your roles. You're going to be not so much deep-lying holders, but, yeah, deep-lying holders, because we need you to stop what comes our way as a pair and then incorporate that 10. We need to be more fluid in our system. We've got Harvey and we've got Carvalho. Neither are ideally suited off the ball to a 4-3-3. It's fine against Bournemouth when we're absolutely battering them because the system is, you know, we're all over them. There is no system. We're just overcoming everything. And, you know, I know what David said about James, and maybe I was overcritical, but if you're part of our 25, you should be more than able to play a few games, 60 minutes, 90 minutes. But in terms of Hendo, the huge issue is he is fully expected to, but can't. Mm. Not in a 4-3-3, certainly not as a right-sided eight, not the engine, not the finesse, not the passing, not the off-ball, not the turn, not the pace. And as a six, what? They'll just target the middle. United did. United came for him. Straight down the middle. So that's why I think if we lose one of our two controllers, one of our two really intelligent left-sided midfielders, don't try and put people that can't play in certain areas. Don't try and repeat things that aren't working. Switch the system. Get two and two next to each. I mean, I want to go 4-2-3-1 anyway. It should be, at the moment, Fab and Thiago with a 10. Harvey, by all means. If they're not in, Naby and Arthur with Carvalho. And then Henderson. I don't know much about Arthur at the moment. Maybe.
No, I don't think anyone does.
He's back to Juventus in January, so who knows. But we're saying, oh, maybe he can... Yeah, he can play the six against teams that do nothing in the middle. So we're saying that we're going to protect him in the middle with teams that offer zero. That's not a Liverpool midfielder, is it? Did we ever say that about Ginny? Or did we just go Ginny can play there as a six against anyone? Oh, we can play Henderson as a six, except if it's Man City, everyone sits and cringes. Oh, that'll be painful. We should not be cringing about any of our starting 11 to 16 players. That should be an elite group. He's part of our best 11, according to Jurgen Klopp. Love Jurgen Klopp, but he does get some things weirdly wrong. And Henderson just isn't built for a 4-3-3. And so I just hope we shift to a system that can protect him a little bit more, protect the backline a little bit more. Give us a 10 to support Darwin. And I think all these things would help Jordan Henderson because he can't play on the left of the three.
Yeah.
He can't play on the right. And I worry about him in the middle. But he's not great in a two, but I think we could channel the system so that the two play tight together, like a Declan Calvin for England sort of system, where we've seen him play that as well. And he hasn't looked disastrous. We just need to limit him and say, don't run too far away because you can't get back. Don't just get terrified every time you get pressed. Just do the sensible thing. Just be a responsible version of what Milner was at 32, 33. Just, you know, don't try and compete with... You see Harvey, oh, we're trying to push Harvey into that position. You're not Harvey, so don't try and be Harvey. Don't try and be an attacking force because you're not one. Don't try and be Trent because you're not Trent. Be Jordan Henderson. Same with Joe Gomez. Be the best player that you can be. You're not going to reinvent yourself at 32 years old. I think I said I gave Henderson a 3.
Yeah.
He's been on a downward spiral for 2 years. He, just like others, needs protection. And a little bit like Robbo, he needs key players to be popping and popping and popping so that he can play to his level. We saw him have a good game against Bournemouth, but that was just because we were battering them. So he could enjoy himself, run through the middle, tear forward. But against good teams, he's found wanting. You know, people question VVD. If we took VVD out of this team in that 10-game period, we'd be down with Brendan, potentially. Or certainly down. But if you took Henderson and just added a reasonable midfielder that could be instructed. It's also the instruction. Is he following the instruction? Is he told to rampage forward and leave Trent all at sea? It's just a weird thing, you know. So I could go on about it, and I have done on other shows.
On this one.
Guy, I need it to end. I need it to end. I think Dave does as well. We just need it to end. It's like the Lovren debacle all over. don't want to hate on the guy, but for me, the players are faceless. It's the performance that matters. I couldn't care who you are. If you're not good enough on the pitch, you're not good enough on the pitch. It's that simple. Yeah, we wanted Tchouaméni. We didn't pivot. We ended up with Milner and Ox and Curtis, who's, I don't even know what.
God, is. I forgot Curtis Jones existed.
Well, he's forgettable. This is, we have the most injury impacted players ever, and we let the most unaffected to injury, who's now got a broken leg, hasn't he, Ginny, go away for free. It's just, it's a ridiculous scenario. Hopefully, Julian Ward writes it in January. Hopefully, this is the thinking that, you know, we've got a short little run to November before the World Cup. We'll be all right. We'll be okay. Milner's over there. It hasn't worked out that way, though, has it?
No, it clearly hasn't. It clearly hasn't. I think the midfield, it's just reminiscent of that the centre back issues of 2021, wasn't it? But I think this is more about a lack of quality rather than options. Obviously, the injuries makes it a lack of options at times, but you just look and we've kind of discussed it all there.
It's the stylistic thing. It's having the right type of player to play in a 4-3-3. We couldn't play Reece and Nat in a high line, so we dropped it. You know, we can't play Milner and Henderson in a three unless there's absolutely Thiago and Fab or Keita as the other two. So if we don't have all the components, I think I wrote it in an article last week, we have to find a different system for when we don't have these controlling players.
Yeah.
We have to be more rigid. We have to. Teams will come for us because they'll sense that we're just weak in certain areas.
Yeah, I think that's the issue. So I just realised we've been going a little while. So I'm going to start doing players in pairs. So I think the best thing to do here is discuss Thiago and Fabinho in the pair. And Stephen, I'll start with you. Obviously, Thiago's not played a lot this season. That is the issue with him. But I think we see the knock-on effect with that with Fabinho, whereas we've mentioned it a lot in this podcast. He doesn't really have the help with him. He's got a mark, basically an ocean of a pitch. But I still think he's had some good performances in that. I think the start of the season was pretty ugly. Like, the Fulham game, he wasn't good. He came as a sub against United, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he had to.
Yeah, and Palace, again, he was kind of on his own at times. But I think after the United game, apart from Napoli, because it was horrendous, I think Fabinho's kind of grew into the season. But the narrative is still there that he's struggling, which I think after the first few games, I think that's kind of wrong.
I gave him a 7. He's not struggling in his own performance. He's struggling with what's around him. He's having to adapt. We can't drop the defensive line because we give too much space to the midfield. He's just being pulled all over the shop. Of course you're going to have weak periods where your common game is so affected by those around you. You know, maybe he's got too used to being next to Thiago and being next to Ginny, but he's still a superb number 6. But we just have to give him the 8. You can't just say, old man to your left, child to your right, go get him. We're squeezing as high as we can. And Darwin's getting sent off in game 2. He is the glue that allows the protection behind, that allows us to win it in certain areas. But we need structural control. Fab's not had a good season, but there's absolute reasons why it would have been worse without him. We saw that in the Man United first half.
Yeah.
You know, shouldn't have. Maybe it wasn't Fab's fault. Get him on the pitch, Fab. Who'd have thunk it? Get a world-class 6 on the pitch who's a destroyer. I mean, as bad as we were in that game, if he starts that game, we win that game because we overpower them in the opening stages.
Or at least draw,
We beat them because they submit. They would have, if we'd have scored the opening goal, they would have withered and died. We gave them every opportunity to get at us because we put weakness in front of them. Fab is a 7. It will elevate. The next time we do this, it will elevate if Thiago's about. And we're doing it in pairs. Thiago's a 9. He's a nine.
He's only played two games, and I agree.
He's a nine. He was exceptional on the. I looked at the team sheet last week for Ajax, and I just looked at his name. I didn't care about anyone else. It didn't matter. He's the system. He is what everyone have become reliant upon. He is what everyone requires to tick over. He is what Steven Gerrard was to a rabble of players that won the Champions League. But we have elite players that are just, we're too finely attuned to what Thiago gives us. And, you know, Naby was always the backup, and we've all said it, one in, one out, one in, one out, we can balance it. And now we've bought Arthur, who has the same attributes, if he's ever going to play. But again, it's just, he's 31, and we need to be more. He obviously tries to buy Tchouaméni. It's disappointing we didn't have a backup to that. Hopefully go for Caicedo in January. Thiago's a nine. He's our best player. He's our most important player, and he allows the system, front, back, sideways, on the ball, off the ball. He makes it look effortless. He's one of the best central midfielders to ever play the game. And please, I never want to see him injured again.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Dave, I'll come to you for the pair. I mean, Fabinho, I think, as I said, I think it's more systemic with Fabinho rather than an issue about his individual form, or certainly was at the start of the season. So your thoughts on Fabinho, if you feel like waxing lyrical on Thiago, feel free. But then we'll move. I'll start Harvey Elliott with you as well.
Yeah, so I'll just go through the three of them then, I suppose. Fabinho, it's partly systemic, and I think also partly individual. I've gone with a six because...
Yeah, that's what I would have went with.
And it's not particularly, obviously, damning compared to some of the other ratings that we've seen so far. And I agree, it's because he's been left to simply cover too much space. And you could argue that because he's being saddled with so much responsibility in that way, that some of the mistakes that he has made might just be down to exhaustion. You know, I think the moment that I kind of epitomizes it in a way is against Napoli. I think it's, I'm not even going to attempt to say his name, the Georgian winger
Cavaradonna or whatever.
Yeah, who ripped us apart. I think Fabinho basically makes two lunging tackles, identical ones in the center circle, and both of them he just gets sidestepped. And I'm like, that's either poor from him or just a sign of how sort of gassed he is because, of all the work he's having to do. So there's different ways of looking at it. I want to see more from him still in terms of his level, and I'm confident that we will now that Thiago's back. And on Thiago, you know, I won't go into the whole, all his attributes and stuff, because that's kind of very well trodden ground at this point. But the one thing that stood out to me against Ajax was his leadership in terms of dragging the team up a level. Really, and also I think drawing out of the crowd as well, and the difference he made in terms of his presence, I think was not just his footballing ability, but also his presence and being that kind of veteran leader, I think was palpable. And then you move on to Elliot, which is a really interesting one. I think probably one of the more interesting ones in the whole podcast, really. So you've got the two sides to it. I think on the ball, he's been one of Liverpool's best players, to be fair. You've sensed that the narrative has been changing around him because, you know, I sort of looked at it and was like, he's definitely been one of the standouts, and it's more impressive that he's doing that in a team that is generally failing, sort of systemically.
Yeah.
And then you start to think, and people have started to raise, well, is he actually part of the reason that the team is failing systemically in terms of his defensive weaknesses? And, you know, my opinion on this will probably change. You've got to bear in mind that he's played, what, probably nine, ten at most.
Yeah, I think it was a handful last season.
Yeah, in that position, really.
Yeah.
And my opinion right now is that he does need to do more in terms of the defensive side. Just things like he's being dribbled past too much, for example. You know, we need to sort of put up more of a fight in that sense. But I think that if you look at teams, at elite teams who play a 4-3-3, often they will have a midfielder in there who has a lot of attacking license and can drift out into wide positions. Like De Bruyne at Man City is a really good example. You know, he likes to obviously attack in the half space, but also on the touchline too. And if you look at his defensive numbers, you know, he's barely doing anything really tangible in terms of off the ball work, but Man City still look, you know, very solid. And I think that's because he has the structure in place behind him to kind of provide that balance still and account for his attacking instincts. So for me, I look at it like that. I kind of want to reserve judgment because, you know, the problem is that you've had two midfielders in there who aren't offering enough defensively. If Elias is the one who has that license and Thiago's in there, and he has the defensive awareness and can contribute a lot more on that side of the game, then is Elliot actually going to have, you know, is Elliot going to be someone that is the best option in that position if we have the more balance in the midfield? So that's the interesting one. And Ajax is interesting from that point of view because on the one hand, the goal comes down his side, yes, and people would use that to maybe justify one argument. But then you can also say on the flip side, well, look how few chances Liverpool actually gave up in that game because Thiago was back. Yeah. Is this actually a workable midfield? And is is it now a case where we can sort of allow for Elliot's
learning
and focus on the offensive side of the game because we have the greater balance that Thiago affords? But I would potentially as well like to see, you know, if we were to go to a 4-2-3-1 like we did against Ajax, you know, Firmino's probably leaving at the end of the season. If that was Liverpool's long-term formation, might Elliot's best position actually be, if Klopp doesn't fancy him as a winger and he's too attack-minded to be sort of a right central midfielder, then what about number 10? You know, maybe that's the home that he lands at, because I think his skill set in terms of, you know, passing ability, able to score goals, could actually lend itself quite well to that. So maybe you want to think about there too.
I'd actually agree with that. I think if... I don't think we have to change like just to a 4-2-3-1 and that's what it's written down in paper. But yeah, I think if we even saw it in the Ajax game a bit, if we just let that right-sided role have a lot more freedom, we tinker with Trent's position or role a wee bit. It just let... Having Thiago there lets Fabinho cover that side more securely. And I think that works regardless of formation. But yeah, I think a 10 or an 8.5, if that's how we word it, I think that's probably his long-term future. Because we know what our wide forwards need. We need pace and we need goals. And I don't think Elliot has that in his locker. But yeah, I think as long as, and Stephen keeps mentioning it, as long as we have that controlling midfielder there, I think Elliot can be fine as that third midfielder or 10. But without that there, the midfield gets really loose. And yeah, it is an issue. But Stephen, your thoughts on Elliot, who is seemingly my player of the season so far with the 6.8 free recurring, which I think is the highest so far. But at the same time, it is an interesting debate because I think it is an issue. But I think, again, with Thiago fixes all this, I think.
Yeah. I've given Harvey a 7, and it's a soft one, just because I think he's been a bright shining star on the ball when we needed, you know, something to cheer on. And he's just not a midfielder, not a central midfielder anyway. We bought Carvalho on top of him a couple of years ago. It must be, and we bought an actual centre forward who's going to play those 10 yards high, you would assume.
Yeah.
I think we are transitioning, and I think we would have transitioned from the season start more into it if, you know, the key components had been ready. David's right. You know, I said it earlier. Harvey should be that 10. We should take that reliance on him away. You know, yeah. Because then you'd see more and more control from Thiago and Fab. They just run that midfield. They'd shift right. They'd shift left. They'd just be where they needed to be. And if we need that extra body, Harvey would come in and become like a havoc causer out of possession, as opposed to someone who continually getting targeted and ran at. And can you help Trent? What was it against? He loses the ball and he can't win it back. He gets taken apart because he's physically, he's not able to play the way we need our midfielders to play. None of these are his fault. We haven't signed him to be a right-sided eight. We're not looking at 6'2" Jude Bellingham to be the rotation piece with Trent, with Harvey. We just aren't.
Yeah.
We're looking at bigger things. We're looking at, you know, different dynamics within our squad, and Harvey's going to be one of those. He's probably capitalised on the situation, but he's now getting found out a little bit. So I think I said, you know, he needs to be taken out of the firing line, like with, has happened before with young players, and then just ease him in and ease him in, and then we can shift the system to what we need it to be. We can't just keep blooding all these players. Diaz is still being blooded. Darwin's being blooded. Harvey's being blooded. We can't keep, transitional seasons aside, we're too good to, we should be able to do one at a time. And Darwin needs to be the more important facet. So I'd rather have a more solidified midfield behind him. And, but I'm all for seeing Harvey or Fab in that 10. All for it. Yeah. Harvey's a 7. And it might be soft, but he's really good, got great potential. I just don't know what his best position for Liverpool in the next 2-3 years is.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing, because it's a tough one, because he's not exactly Moa, as I said, in that regard. And we know the midfield has roles, and we think with Jude Bellingham, who that will be his role, and so on, as you say. But we'll move on from the midfield, because this podcast is going long, but we'll go into the attack. Before we move on to the attack, does anyone want to add anything on Carvalho? I think he just looks promising, but he's clearly not a midfielder when he started there. He's just not a midfielder.
Same as Harvey, we just need to define his role and ease him into games here and there. We don't need to be reliant on him.
Dave, I'll start with you, and we'll start with Diaz, who Stephen just mentioned is still settling in, to be fair, but it's an odd one, because I think he does have those Mane clutch genes where he will just come in and do a moment of magic. I think we saw it against Palace, didn't we? Bournemouth, he was special. Even in Newcastle, I think there was other performances there. But I don't think he's got that ruthless streak yet that Mane got, especially in his peak years. But he's still not been here a year, so I think that will come. Maybe the second half of this season after the break, or it might be next season. But I think Diaz has clearly been one of our better players this season, but I still think there's more to come and more to expect from a Liverpool forward.
My opinion on him changes almost week to week. Sometimes I'm like, wow, this guy really is special, and then other times I'm like, yeah, he is still developing at this level. So, and that maybe will continue for a period. I mean, he scored 4 goals so far this season. I think he got 5 or 6 last season in about 26 games. Only played 8 so far this season, obviously. So, one of the things that was mentioned in the summer was, you know, is he going to score more goals this season? In his first full campaign, and people confident that he would. So positive stars from that point of view. I think to go with a positive and a negative, the positive is that he's able to drag the team up with him, which is a brilliant quality to have. We saw that against Palace, you know, Liverpool, it felt for a spell like he was going to sort of take the 10 men to a victory single-handedly. They obviously didn't pan out like that in the end, but against Napoli too, he was the one who kind of maintained his professional pride in a way, really, and tried to inspire something in terms of reaction second half. So character-wise, really encouraging. I just want to see, I think, more complete 90-minute performances from him. I think he is a player who has electric spells in games, which might be half an hour, might be a half, for example. But there's also kind of long periods where he is a little bit quiet. So I want to maybe...
The cup finals probably highlight the best, yeah. Where he was the best player and then he just kind of died to death. Maybe just tiredness in them games.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, maybe sustaining it a little bit more. But I think on balance, he has been one of the better players this season. So I'd give him a 7. And also, I think I forgot to give my Elliott score earlier, yes. Which would also be a 7, by the way.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with both of them. Stephen, anything to add on Diaz, or shall we move on?
I'll give him a 7. It's the same thing. He's superb. He just has to now learn to play with certain players. So he can only gradually grow, and there's no worries on him. Robbo has to learn how to play with him. I think Thiago will knit those two together nicely anyway. And he has to, you know, really speed up his transition to play with Jota and Darwin.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I will move on to Mo for you then, Stephen, who... he's looked fine in spells, like... who was game week 5? Was that Newcastle? I think it was Newcastle. He was good in that game. I'll grant my rating if that was Newcastle. He was good in that game. Good against Ajax. Everyone was good against Bournemouth, even though he missed some sitters. Mm-hmm. Fulham, I think he scored, obviously. But post AFCON, it's not the same as best player in the world pre-AFCON. And that is the question mark. Is which one's the real Mo? We know he's world-class in that. But can he get back to that level where he was the best player in the world? Will the team ever be that settled to get him to that level again? It's an odd one, because I think teams have figured out if you kind of lock him out with three players, it does put all the burden mainly on Diaz. And I think that's kind of what the patterns were seeing, where he has to basically be superhero and try and skin people and score. Whereas Mo can do that, but when it's three players every time he gets the ball, it's tough. So I think it's been a tough spell for Mo, but I think the quality's there, but just the effectiveness is kind of wore off's probably wrong, but I'll go with it. Wore off mainly because he's just getting marked out of games by just too many people.
Yeah. I mean, teams are now executing the low block with such brilliance. We've just got to find ways. We have to show more patience. We have to have more control of the ball. We need Darwin to, you know, I think that's partly why we've bought Darwin, to take the relief off him, to be maybe that buffer at times, to be, you know, they're sending two and three players out to mark Mo. Well, we just need to make sure that the components that aren't being overly marked are then contributing offensively. Mo was still getting chances last season. He just looked tired. This season, he looks far too wide and we're not getting him in the box nearly enough. Whether that's a Pep Linders thing, I don't know, but I'm sure it's maybe Harvey being in the team has created the need to be wider. Maybe we need to switch that over.
I think that I did switch it against Ajax, to be fair.
Yeah, but it's a training ground thing, and luckily we have one of the best coaches in the world. So I've no doubt that if we simplify Mo's game and just find ways to push him into the box, you know, so he's not carrying the ball from deep positions so often. You know, we need him in and around there. We need balls driven into feet of Darwin and Mo to work off him. We saw, you know, that little backheeled flick that Bobby did for Mo last season. I think it was against Newcastle, maybe. And he was able to just drive inside. He's not doing that from 30 yards wide. So we need to find, again, Darwin is key to this, and we really need to get him up to speed. That's obviously why Jota came straight back in, because he has that familiarity. Mo's a 6 for me, but this is a player that should be getting a 9 with Thiago. So that's for me, a 6 is a big drop-off. He's not playing bad, he's just not playing like Mo Salah.
I'd actually agree with that. And David, your thoughts on Mo, and then we'll move on to Bobby, but Mo almost feels somewhat similar to Fabinho, where I think some of it is systemic because he is holding hands with the assistant referee at times. But once he does get in them positions, I think he has looked dangerous, but it has just been getting him in them positions when he has been let off the loose from holding hands with the assistant referee.
I mean, if you look at the stats, it's like it's 3 goals and 2 assists in 8 games still. So it's one of them with Salah where it's like he can be sort of what you'd consider under-delivering in terms of numbers, but also still have ones that look still objectively pretty good. I think you look at it and his expected goals per 90, which I was looking at before the podcast, 0.71 last season, 0.42 this season. You know, that is a really significant drop-off. And that, to me, points to systemic issues because there's no other reason, I think, for those numbers to fall so much. You know, Graham Souness made this point where he was like, oh, he's got his contract, now he's slackened off. But, you know, just look at that moment against Ajax where him and Elliot, I think it was absolutely, it was like a lung-busting run backwards, really.
And then ran back up for a chance.
Yeah. So I don't think there's any question at all about Salah's efforts. And let's also realise that these Liverpool players have won everything, but it's not like they don't feel that sort of sense of completion, I don't think. And that is because when they won the Premier League, it was behind closed doors. And to me, you know, ideally you'd want your players to have the hunger anyway to win things repeatedly.
More talks about the Ballon d'Or every time he's
exactly. So he's got an individual motivation too. So look, I don't think there's any motive, you know, I'm not saying the attitude has been perfect, it hasn't been by any stretch, but I don't think that that's to do with motivation whatsoever. To be honest, I think that's there. And I think, with Salah, the only issue so far has been systemic. And hopefully the goal against Ajax in the kind of position where we like seeing him is a positive sign in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think real promise.
6 out of 10, by the way. Forgot again.
Yeah. No, it's my job to ask. I keep forgetting to ask. But yeah, I'd actually agree with 6 out of 10, which is a real drop-off, as Stephen said. He should be up in the 9s, but hopefully the Ajax game, again, is a turning point and he plays a bit more narrower and he has his mate Jota back there who he can bounce off a bit better. But Dave, I'll stick with you for Bobby, who has had a really odd season because I think he started the season basically horrendously. Like the Fulham game, he looked finished. Palace game, again, he looked finished. Then he got a hat-trick against Bournemouth and I think he got 2 assists as well, or maybe even 3 assists. And I think after Bournemouth, he's been mostly good. But at the same time, I still want Jota to be the starter. So it's an odd one for Bobby, whereas I think he's still very much useful in certain games where you can drag out the defence and stuff like that. But in some games when it's going to just be horrendous low blocks, I think you do need to have a Jota or a Darwin on there. But I think Bobby's had a bit of an up and down one, but the up's been really good, whereas the downs you kind of look, oh my God, why is he still here? Well, a very mixed bag, but yeah, a weird one, I think.
So I've gone with a 6.
Yeah.
And I almost wanted to go with a 5 because I'm very resistant on putting too much emphasis on that Bournemouth game, which I think not only up to now, but also over the season as a whole, it is going to significantly skew his stats. You know,
yeah,
they are. Two goals and 3 assists in the Premier League game, obviously, or whatever it was, 3 goals, 2 assists, can't really remember. But also the value of a 9-0 win in terms of trends, I think is quite limited. I mean, we saw Liverpool, their performance levels just dipped again pretty much straight away after that game. So it was a bit of an outlier. So I want to make sure that we don't focus too much on the numbers with him, which look all right, and think more about the performances, which I don't think have been particularly good and have been really frustrating, to be honest, for the most part, is my opinion with Bobby. And, you know, to talk about Jota, it's really unfortunate that he got injured because I think he would have been the ideal sort of stopgap for Liverpool. Absolutely. And I don't mean that in an offensive way to him. I just mean, you know, this version of Firmino, I think, is glaringly obvious that he's in decline. And if Klopp wanted to ease Nunez in, which it's pretty clear that he did and still does, then I think Jota in the front three would have been the best solution. And yeah, obviously got a taste of that against Ajax, and we'll see how much he plays in the next few weeks. And obviously getting the assist there too, maybe a sign of what we missed in some respects. But yeah, I'd go with a six for Firmino. I think a five is too harsh because, you know, he has scored the few goals, but I'm not really seeing much to be kind of, you know, that
the
encouraged.
The link players, what he built it on, that's kind of what's disappeared, hasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly my sort of focus with it, really. So, yeah. I mean, he's leaving at the end of the season, isn't he?
Yeah,
I don't think he's going to be able to do anything this season to change that.
We'll see if Klopp comes out the bat for him. We've had it before.
Maybe.
Stephen, if you want to add anything on Bobby, feel free. But Jota's not... Well, he only had the Ajax game, so not really worth talking about. But maybe we can talk about him in partnership with Darwin. Again, he's only had... I was going to say three games, but he got sent off in one of them, so it's not even a full game. But if we talk about our central forward options as a group here, and for me, I agree with what David said there. I think Jota should be the starter, because I think he was going to be if he didn't get injured anyway, because just settled team. Bobby's on the decline, as we say. Jota didn't have the best second half of last season, but he has them relationships. Whereas Darwin... Community Shield, fantastic. Not part of this rating because it's a pre-season game. Fulham came on and changed the game. Headbutted someone the next game after. Then the Everton game, he had a couple nice eye-catching chances, but it just didn't work. So it's a tough one with our central options. But what about your thoughts on them, on the three of them?
Bobby's a six because he's been important when we need him to be, which shouldn't be the case. I'm glad Jota's back, and Jota, for me, has earned starting slots, and Darwin needs to win it. You know, we can't just be handing these positions out to Darwin. I think Darwin will be sensational long term, but I don't know what system we've got in line for him or how that best gets things out of. No, I wouldn't be against 4-4-2. But then, you know, I think I said in pre-season I would have liked just to sign a bespoke right winger like a Gnabry or someone, and then just push Mo into that centre forward position with a Darwin or with a Jota. I think there's lots of things. There's too many questions. And, you know, you're never going to be ultra successful against such a Goliath that is, you know, free spending City by having too many questions. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of the answers. Darwin's a five because he's shown enough to be what 85 million you need to be a lot.
Yeah.
The headbutt just tarnishes everything, doesn't it? It's that Joe Cole moment where you're so expecting then,
what a twat.
You just need him to bounce back, and it's time, and it's learn the key facets from Jota, the key facets from over key facets from Bobby, and just become a sensational centre forward, and that's what we need. That's what, you know, various parts of our team require. I just don't know what the next evolution of our system is, but I know that Darwin has to be part of that. But at the moment, Jota, if I was to grade him, it's a six or a seven. He hasn't played really, but he has to be a starting piece in that middle if fit, because we know what he can do, and he's earned it. He's earned a starting, and Darwin has to win it. That would be my anything to Darwin. Go win it. Go win that shirt and play yourself into our team. 85 million aside, you know, Bobby should not be starting ahead of him. Jota shouldn't. So go prove why we've paid the money.
Yeah.
I've got no real issues with Darwin. It's a learning curve. Maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't. It wasn't obviously great for us to lose a player, but I'd just love to see a really offensive system, because I think a more offensive system and more attacking players on the pitch can only open up, you know, Diaz and Mo, who I think get surrounded, you know. So if we had a 10 or, you know, a second striker into that middle, you know, you're not going to see the defenders push so wide to cover areas, because they're going to need to do more inside. I think we have it in us to be 4-2-3-1. I think we have it in us to be 4-4-2. And I think Darwin could be a vital part of that, just not yet. So Bobby 6, Darwin 5, Jota 6.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with him. I just realised I typed whilst unmuted there, so apologies to listeners and to Steve for making his point there. we'll finish up with Klopp because I know this podcast has run long, so we won't focus too much on Klopp. But I think everyone agrees the start of the season's not been anywhere close to what we wanted it to be. Stephen, by the sounds of it, you've obviously hinted at a lot of these issues you think stem from Klopp, and favouritism has been mentioned a fair bit. But what would your number be on that, and just a small summary of what you think the issues are for Klopp? Yeah.
3, for not demanding the player we needed, for making some rash decisions in his selection. You know, the dropping Fabinho for Henderson against United is bad. You know, for putting Milner against Napoli, bad. For being too reliant on Harvey and putting too much pressure on him, bad. But he started Thiago, so that gives him 3 points out of 10.
He can't get any worse.
So I think this 2 weeks away to work on the training field maybe reinvigorates. Well, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to do it. I've got full faith in him, but he just needs... I don't think he wants to pick Henderson and Milner all the time. We weren't trying to sign Tchouaméni to clean Hendo's boots. We clearly want someone. But it's just an annoyance. So Julian Ward, maybe I'm giving him a 2 because he did good things, but he didn't get what we really needed. And I think that that's had massive knock-on effects. You know, to say that Milner's our 7th or 8th choice, but choices 6, 5, 4, 3 are all injury prone. So who saw that coming? It's just Klopp needs to show, you know, why he is a world-class coach, and he's got to use this period to refine us. And what, we 5 points behind City, is it?
Yes, I think so. Maybe a bit more, plus they're played, obviously.
So that would take it to 8, wouldn't it? So 8 with the game in hand. So if we win our game
If
we're 5 points behind in this horrendous period, it can only get better.
Very true. David, your thoughts? I mean, it's almost similar to what we mentioned with Van Dijk. This is a superhuman coach, and when he's, let's say, out of form, for want of a better phrase, which I think coaches can be, do you judge him against regular coaches or the standard he set at the club?
Yeah. Do you know what? I wrote down 6 and now I'm sat here thinking to myself, maybe it should be less, and maybe I'll put 6 because I've got so much respect for him and I recognise how good he is. And, you know, in my opinion, the best manager in the world. I almost didn't want to give him too low a score, but there have been issues sort of general and also specific games, you know, maybe having too much faith in Milner in certain moments, even though there have been injuries, not playing Fabinho at Old Trafford. Some of the decisions in the derby, like when Milner came on, Carvalho and Elliot starting together, Elliot then moving into a midfield 2 in the second half, all a little bit strange. But, you know, there have been good moments too. I think the performance against Ajax, for example, and also to a degree the performance against Bournemouth, even though that was a little bit of a false dawn, you know, he has been able to inspire reactions when we have had our lowest point so far this season. And yeah, now that he's got one of his most important players back, we'll see how much better, you know, things get really. And it's going to be interesting to see whether there are sort of system changes, you know, significant ones, whether it's a 4-2-3-1 or something just stylistic within the 4-3-3 that happens now, because the personnel has shifted quite a bit from, you know, the team that a lot of the patterns have been built for. So, yeah, an intriguing period for Klopp. Not had the best starts of the season, I think, from the managerial point of view. But, yeah, there's some challenges to face, and it'll be interesting to see how he kind of tackles them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We will finish up there because this has gone longer than I think any of us thought it would. but there was a lot to discuss, obviously, in the way we've played. a lot of it needed discussing. But we'll finish up there. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to the pair for joining me. We'll have more content over the international break. Don't worry about that, people. But goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.